Welcome to Two Peds in a Pod, the medical education podcast from the Children's Emergency Department at Derby. I'm your host today, Dr. Ian Lewins, one of the consultants here, and I'm very happy to be joined by one of my colleagues, Dr. Vanessa Cox.
Hello.
Hello, Vanessa. And you're a general paediatrician with an interest in young people.
Adolescent health, indeed.
The youth.
The youth, I believe, of today.
Kids call it. Okay. Yes. So the first question I had, please tell me I'm not alone in that, in my ED. Very happy to chat to babies, very happy to chat to toddlers, school-age kids, fantastic, lovely. Teenagers, anxiety.
Oh.
It's not just me, is it?
No, absolutely. It is not just you.
Good.
So young people, 10 to 19, are a tricky group. 10 to 25, if you want to go with the young adult definition of the WHO. They're a tricky group for healthcare professionals to engage with. Traditionally, you've got the image of Kevin the teenager, sulky, no eye contact, their non-verbal communication is just shocking. Their verbal communication, they have such a limited vocab, about 12,000 words or so in early teenage years, which is hardly anything, actually. So they really struggle to express themselves. I think we come at this with our prejudices,
absolutely,
difficult attitude towards them, you know, thinking that every teenager is the same. They're all going to be as grumpy, all going to struggle to talk to me. And therefore, quite commonly, we hear from young people that they don't feel respected or listened to or like their concerns are taken seriously. Factored into that, of course, is the fact that we're always doing triadic consultations in paediatrics when their carer, whoever that may be, or whoever they bring to their consultation, that might be a partner or a friend or just somebody they trust locally, and they're also wanting to be part of a conversation with the healthcare professional, but these young people need time on their own as well. Yeah. They need to be given a space to be heard, to be listened to have a confidential conversation with a medic or a nurse or what have you, and clearly having an agreement about what to feedback with the carers or to the carers after that confidential conversation is difficult. And clearly take loads of time, which we don't have.
Yeah. And it's that sort of, as you say, I love the word triadic. I'm going to use that some more.
Yeah.
Three-way conversation, yeah, of who, you know, and you know, you occasionally get the slightly overbearing parent who will want to answer all the questions and you think, I'm losing here.
Yeah.
So I think you're absolutely right that we often go in with a bit of a prejudice of, oh, this is going to be a difficult consultation anyway, and you automatically make it a difficult consultation sometimes. So one of the things that people have used that we're going to talk about today is a structured approach,
yeah,
to chatting to people,
yeah,
and that is
the HEDS assessment,
the
HEDS framework. Yeah.
So
HEDS assessment.
I can never remember what these all stand for.
It's really easy.
There's always lots of S's and
there
D's.
There are a few S's. So,
okay.
So a HEDS framework is something that I'll commonly use when I've had a conversation with a young person, focusing on them and then saying, you know, we will have some time on our own later. It's not a framework that you can have to stick to rigidly, okay? So the areas of the HEDS assessment have capital letters at the start. So H for home, E for education, A for activities and hobbies they may have, D for drugs, alcohol and tobacco, and then slightly more difficult topics. So sex and relationships follows. S next is for self-harm and suicidal ideation, etc. And then the last one is formally labelled as safety. That I'll come on to, that might be a difficult one to address, but sometimes when you're talking about these things with young people and taking a proper psychosocial history, you'll come across issues where clearly this young person is feeling vulnerable in some situations, and often I ask them outright, this might be a difficult question, but do you feel safe in your relationship? Do you feel safe at home? Do you feel safe when you're online gaming and all these things? And actually more recently, not in the original HEDS framework, but another S, so four S's now, I think a lot about screen time.
Okay.
And young people on social media. So my four S's at the end. So the framework is designed to be, you know, a framework. It's not got to be stuck too rigidly. I often don't get through all those topics with a young person in each consultation, but it's a way into some perhaps less threatening topics for the young person, still relevant to their healthcare, and explaining why relevance to healthcare of all those things is also important, obviously. perhaps when you've identified that home is actually quite a secure place to them, home might be a good place to start and say, you know, who lives at home with you? Do you share your own? Do you share your bedroom? You've got your own room. Who do you talk to? Who else is around? When you're worried, who do you go to? And that, for most young people, is a fairly secure way into things. Education, you know, all young people should be in educational training, so that also shouldn't be too threatening. But you get a bit of a vibe from them back as to, is this a difficult topic? You can steer things through to what do they actually enjoy? Focus on what they enjoy, what they're good at, and what their plans are long-term under activities. And that rapport building, really, then lets you have a conversation again about confidentiality. So I always do that at the start of the consultation. I'll come on to that in a bit. And then reiterating about confidentiality, what goes on in this room is between you and I. And I might ask some more difficult questions here. You don't have to answer them.
Okay.
I'm asking because I think STIs are relevant to your abdominal pain, or I need to make sure you're not pregnant, or that kind of thing. But just simply asking, you seeing anyone at the moment? You in a relationship? Have you had thought about having sex? Are your friends having sex? Are you having sex with this person? Do you feel coerced into that? When did you last have sex? When was your period? Mm. Any risk of STIs? So from the heads framework, you sort of get these topics, but the questions can be quite tricky if you're suddenly launching at them. These kind of give you a way in. They normalise these teenage behaviours, and then they lead you into the detail that you definitely need to gather as a healthcare professional. And the same with self-harm and suicidality. So if you've got somebody with chronic abdominal pain, I keep saying abdominal pain because it's so common, someone with chronic abdominal pain, you might say, you know, lots of young people we see with chronic pain start getting really low about it and start disengaging with their friends and not enjoying activities and having poor sleep. And then that leads you on to, is your mood really low? Do you feel teary a lot of the time? Have you ever had any thoughts around that, around ending your life at all? And then you can get into really difficult questions like, do you have a plan? Mm-hmm. Have you planned anything? Have you written a note? Are you stashing tablets? And you get there. Mm-hmm. To those challenging questions. And from experience, for me it works, you know, and for loads of trainees coming through it works. Actually young people, when they are given some respect and some time, do usually open up.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, I think the first time I was kind of introduced to it was when I was doing an oncology job.
Mm-hmm.
And the professor who particularly looked after the teenagers and young people actually said we should always do a heads assessment.
Definitely.
For all those people, and you think, well, hang on, what's that got to do with their oncology?
Yeah.
But actually, it's incredibly relevant.
Yeah. The impact on life of a diagnosis like that, can you imagine? And the time in hospital, and who are they going to talk to when they're sad? A bit like those Macmillan adverts out at the moment, when a sister with cancer is still a sister, still getting married, still wants to enjoy her wedding day, and a dad with cancer is still a dad. These young people have got sometimes long-term conditions, but acknowledging the impact on every area of life is really important. And that area of life and their alcohol might be affecting their diabetes control. So it works both ways, and it's really relevant for us to do as healthcare professionals if we're going to give holistic care to these young people.
How do you go about sort of introducing this framework? Do you sort of say, I'm going to ask you a standard set of questions I'd ask everybody? Because
yeah.
That makes it sort of seem almost quite artificial.
Robotic, yeah.
So I'm going through a tick box of things. And I think that's the danger, isn't it? That you can say, right, here's a list of questions I ask everybody.
It kind of feels very unpersonal. That's not how I do it at all.
Okay.
I individualise it, as I say, for each young person. In my consultations, so I always go out to the waiting room, meet the young person, greet them, tell them who I am, and say, usually I get young people to come in with mum or dad or carer first of all, and then we have some time later in the consultation when it's just you and I having more of a chat in depth about your health. And just normalising that makes it easier from the start to then kick out mum and dad later. Mm.
And do you ever get any resistance to that from parents?
Not generally.
Okay.
No. When it's normalised, it's easier in teenage clinic when the focus is on young people's health. We have youth workers around and there's signposting to different agencies locally for different support for teenagers, really. Mm-hmm. So it's easier in that context, but in general paediatrics, on the ward, usually I take them to a quiet place away and just say, I'm going to borrow you for 10 minutes and then we'll get mum in or whatever. There isn't resistance, you know.
Okay.
You know, you just have to give them the option. And then I just keep an open mind. So we do our non-medical chat at the beginning, don't we, with everybody we meet, like, how's the weather, what music do you like, you know, get into that sort of thing, and then you move on to, so you're here because.
Yeah.
And really, I just focus on, first of all, the physical health, and say, I'm going to ask a few more questions around your day-to-day life and how you might be coping with the problems that you're having.
Yep.
So I keep it fairly vague, but in my mind, the other bit is I'm trying not to write everything. My memory is shocking.
Yeah, right.
So my memory is shocking, and I do find myself jotting down some notes, but of course that creates a barrier and decreases rapport. So in my mind, I'm trying to keep the HEADS framework in mind and stick things in each box as I go through it, but I'm not formally ticking through H, right, we've done H, right, let's move on. You know, that's false. It doesn't create good rapport. It makes them to be just another number a bit and doesn't really individualise the approach and show respect, really, for each in person.
And I guess that comes with experience of doing lots of things.
Yeah, this comes with practice, definitely. Yeah.
And what kind of... Obviously, in the teenage clinics, it's a bit different, but what sort of age would you use that framework from? You sort of said 10. 10
plus. Yeah, 10 plus. And I wouldn't routinely see all 10-year-olds on their own, but I would, if I've got somebody coming repeatedly for their chronic problem, or those in diabetes clinic, I know they normalise from about that age onwards that people would be given, young people would be given some time in clinic on their own from now on.
Yeah.
Yeah? And that should be part of smooth transition planning, helping them to make decisions about their healthcare themselves, increasing their independence and autonomy, empowering them really to manage their condition, whatever that may be, and navigate healthcare, like appointments, people, clinics, who they've got to meet, what admin they've got to do. So yeah, that's how I approach it.
And would you, obviously that's kind of in a clinic environment, is that still on the ward? If you're doing a post-take ward round, would you still apply that framework?
Yeah, I always... either myself or a colleague usually completes a HEADS assessment, usually a full one actually, during the course of an inpatient stay, not just for those young people who've come with social or mental health problems, but for most young people who've ended up on a teenage, who've ended up in hospital, we should know their context. So I do encourage it, I do it myself, I take them off. It takes 10-15 minutes if you commit to it and get it done and get somewhere quiet.
So... In ED, should I be doing these?
I don't see why not.
Yeah.
Certainly the first few aspects, because actually when you're asking about home education, activities and drugs, you get a bit of a vibe, is there anything else going on?
Mm.
And that can lead you to some few more useful questions, safeguarding-wise. I would, yeah, as part of a normal mental, physical health, holistic approach to each in person.
Yeah. You're probably right. You are right.
I feel bad. I acknowledge that it's tricky.
Yeah, but I guess particularly for sort of medically unexplained, you know, there's clearly a need to sort of be delving slightly deeper that maybe we are not quite as good as we should be.
I would tend to disagree with that. I see commonly, certainly in trainees coming through paediatrics or doing HEADS assessments, even just a little summary for me. It gives me a little hook to hang something on sometimes up here on the ward. I think actually colleagues are really good at thinking, okay, this is probably medically unexplained, and exploring a bit more with families, even in the ED, from referrals that I've seen up to the ward and into clinic. So I'm pleased about that.
Well, that's okay, good. Glad to be wrong. I often am. And how would you approach the question, the sort of, if you say, well, I'm going to ask a few things, and the young person says, that's fine, but you can't tell anybody else, you can't disclose this to anybody.
Yeah,
how would you approach that comment?
That's a difficult one. So usually at the start I preempt that by saying a confidentiality phrase. So to each young person when they're on their own, I say, you must have heard the word confidentiality, and I just want to explain what it means to me so that you understand where we are at the start of the consultation. So for me it means a private chat between a doctor and a young person. That goes no further than this room, even if I'm your own mother's GP or whatever, and reassure them to that extent. I also explain to them the caveats to that are, if I'm worried you're hurting yourself, or if you're hurting anybody else, or anyone's at risk of harm, I of course have to share that with people, but we'll discuss that through who those people are, what I'll be saying, and why I'm doing that, so that you know clearly what the reasons are for that. Because we see lots of young people who are at risk themselves, don't we, and others, and just normalising that and saying this is where we're at the start just preempts that, I think.
And do most people sort of respond to that? Are they Or have you ever encountered many situations where they go, right, I'm not telling you anything?
No. So they might do, yeah. Mm. Yeah, and just having an open mind about that, you know, not every young person opens up their soul to us.
No, quite.
Sometimes people are going to be really resistant to help, and you just need to keep sticking by them. This is why we're here. We are listening. If you want to chat, we're around. And a lot of our nurses are great at that here. Mm. These conversations take time. And there's a phrase that we use in motivational interviewing that I'd suggest people read about, which is about encouraging young people to make changes that we want to impose, but we need to get them on board with. Mm. So for further reading, be useful. But there's a phrase called rolling with resistance.
Okay.
And I quite commonly have that in the back of my mind, as in, just this is not the time for this young person, or I've just lost it. You're reading their body language and you're thinking, oh God, I've completely lost rapport, this has all gone wrong. And just acknowledge that. Just go, yeah, we've been chatting for ages, you're probably bored out of your tree. Just go with it and say, we're not going to get anywhere today, I'll come back later, or we'll meet again, or
And you sort of touched on sort of youth workers and the nurses that you work with. Do they tend to use this framework, or do they have a separate?
So youth workers work very differently, a completely different approach, really not a medical approach or a nursing approach. So we've got a fantastic team here. We've got three youth workers now. We've got our own youth forum. And, you know, they do magic, really, with getting young people with poor self-esteem or difficult engaging with even their own peers to come along and come out of their shell. So they have a whole load of training and stuff that I don't. I've not heard of them using this, but there are loads of resources out there for people to look at. So the Me First organisation down in Southampton does loads of things like a heads topic selector. So you don't even have to ask the young person what they want to talk about on the day to day. They can come and say, this bit I'm all right with, I'm happy about managing my condition and smoking and alcohol, but I'm really struggling around contraception with epilepsy or something. So just simple stuff they can fill in the waiting room. Simple stuff about, am I being listened to? What are my choices here? Is really what they want to know. Yeah. And so Me First, I would recommend for that side of things. The Adolescent Health Project on e-learning for health has loads of training on consultation with young people, different health problems they may have. I can't recommend that highly enough to people. It's easy. You can log in for free with just a normal email address, and you can access the learning ongoing. Okay. So great modules to do on there.
And what's that again? Just so
that is Adolescent Health Project, which is on e-learning for health, the NHS e-learning for health. So loads of ideas on there about communication with teenagers. And then there are other things that our Royal College of Paediatrics has started introducing around the RCPCH and us.
Yeah.
So that's their youth participation team. Loads of resources on their section of the website, including things like emoji cards. So, you know, you have your set of emoji cards and some young person's just not getting anything, you're not getting anything back, they're not giving anything. Just say, right, are you just feeling frustrated? And they can pick out which emoji they're feeling. Like, simple, like, really simple stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Emoji cards. Okay, fine. Okay. So if you... it sounds like there's stuff there, but we've got to access that. We've got to be open to access that. Because obviously, that better engagement, better outcomes.
Definitely.
Hopefully.
Yeah, and that's what young people want. They want to feel listened to. They want to be empowered about their conditions. It will improve their diabetic control. Decent transition will mean that they don't fall off the ladder in DKA at the age of 18 when they go off to university. There's a lot of work still to be done, but really, better patient outcomes, better satisfaction personally as a doctor to have actually made a difference and felt like that young person was a human being and valued, and I get a lot from that.
Okay. So if you had sort of a couple of top tips or two or three top tips for us, so maybe specifically in the ED where time is short and it's not necessarily the best environment, what advice would you give to us?
The top one is get the carer out of the room.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're not going to find out if they're pregnant or they've got chlamydia from having mum, dad in there. Second is keep an open mind, keep your poker face on and have a non-judgmental attitude to young people. Whatever their presentation, think making sure things aren't medical, even if they appear like a mental health problem, for instance. So really open mind and non-judgmental. Try not to get flunked by things, but also try not to be too cool. Don't try to be down with the young people and understand their language. Like, it's a whole new world. I can't even remember being a teenager. Like, it is a blur, and they're using words I don't understand. Just say, I don't know what that means. Okay. You know, there's no harm. You're not losing face.
That's always my greatest fear, that I will come across as, God, that's so weird. That creepy old man is.
Do you think? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm over that. I just say, I'm sorry, I don't know what that means. Can you fill me in?
Are you accepting your non-coolness to
I
say
am not
yes?
Cool, yeah. And they certainly won't think I'm cool.
Okay. So, okay, fine. That's because that's one thing I worry about. What a pillock. Okay, so yeah. I've got to accept my...
Yeah, just say, I'm not a teenager. I don't actually know what you're saying. Okay. No, just saying, sorry, can you just explain that in another way?
Yes.
And equally, try not to use our medical jargon, because of course they don't understand it. We should use that for all patients, shouldn't we? But, top tips.
Perfect. That's great. That's really helpful. And I think a lot of people listening to this will find that really useful as well. Thank you so much for your time, Vanessa. I really appreciate it. Cheers.
No problems. Thank you.
Thank you.